Hello, I'm James Fitzsimons, and welcome to The Career Scoop, a podcast all about career progression, advice, and experiences aimed at assisting those who are in career transition. Today, my guest is Michael Greer. Michael is the commercial director for BP Media, a division of BPHL located in Bermuda. BP Media includes the Royal Gazette, Emu, and Bermuda.com. Michael resides in Bermuda and is a Canadian who has worked for various marketing agencies and media companies worldwide. He has held business development roles at group and executive levels. Michael has a passion for brands and particular brand loyalty programs and content marketing. In Michael's current role, he leads a team of media sales, content and development, and multimedia production. Michael has led business teams in Toronto, New York and London, and now calls Bermuda home. Michael, you are in Bermuda as I speak to you. What's the weather like in Bermuda today?
The weather is a standard winter day of 70 degrees Fahrenheit, or, you know, somewhere between 18 or 19 degrees centigrade. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful day today.
That's fabulous. I'm a bit, I wouldn't say jealous, but I could handle. We're kind of end of February over here. Maybe it's 10 degrees. A bit of that little vitamin C sun wouldn't, a little swim in the sea. I know it's a bit cold for you guys. For me, it would be just perfect.
Yeah, it's as we say, it's a little chilly on the bike today.
You know, so listen, tell me about you, Michael. I mean, you've got a varied career in the media space. Do you want to bring us very quickly through and then what you're doing now for the Royal Gazette, as I know you through in Bermuda?
Well, I'm a Canadian who basically moved to Bermuda about 6 years ago, but I've spent the majority of my career in Toronto, some stints in New York, a very short stint in London, and really started my career in the media side, actually selling media advertising when I was younger. And then I kind of morphed into just different management roles in and around that space, and then actually moved into the agency side, the actual marketing agency side. So in our industry, it would be, if you were on that side, you would say, oh, you went to the other side. And in my case, I went to the other side, which was the agency side, which was traditionally a content publishing agency. So we were doing a lot of traditional content publishing, in-flight magazines, magazines that you might see in hotel rooms, and other loyalty branded products. If you had a BMW and they sent you a magazine, this was the type of content that we were creating. That really evolved into content marketing. And I think that the trigger for that was their ability to be able to build more data-driven insights. So we started working with brands a little bit more digital than print, and creating content that would support loyalty type products that went out there into the marketplace. And that's the space that I've kind of been living in for the last 15 years. And I got this opportunity to come down to Bermuda and go back into a media company, which still allowed me to bring a lot of my content marketing skills, but brought me back into this side of the business. One of the questions that I had asked them before I moved here was whether or not there was going to be any travel with this job. And they said there wouldn't be. And that was sort of the kicker for me. I was kind of done traveling, if you can believe it, and really looked forward to being sort of set in one place, ironically on an island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow, that's interesting. And from when you started off in this business, it has changed and evolved, and because of online and digital. So for that young 22, 23-year-old, what was it like for you at that, and then what has changed? So if they're going to get into this work, you know, choose this, your direction as a career, what would you say? How would you compare and contrast?
Well, I think I think you learn a lot of interesting skills when you're younger. You learn that, you know, you learn that your reputation is really, really important. Some of these really sort of basic skills of listening. I believe it or not, you'll use stuff from school. You might not use it definitively, but I did use a lot of the academics that I acquired in school. And I think that the listening, I think that the mentorships were key for me. I can think of three people that I would always look back in my career and think they always had an answer for everything. And I think what you learn, I think the one thing that I've learned the most from mentorships is how to manage people, which is also about building a view to leadership, which was something that you don't think about when you're young. You don't think about being a leader because you've been leaning on your parents your whole life. You lean on your education. When you go and you work for a company, you lean on the company. What's it going to do for me? How is it going to grow me? And then when you sort of evolve into where you are now and you're a senior or an executive, you're all of a sudden, you have to learn these leadership skills or have these leadership skills. So I think those are some of the things that, really made the difference for me. I think over the last 20 years of my career, I think I've lived a change economy. I've been living in the middle of a change economy. I've had to, I think when I was growing up, it was the three R's: reading, writing, and arithmetic. And now I think those are gone. And I think your ability to relearn is going to be the new three R's. Can you learn something, use it for 10 years, use it for 5 or 10 years, and then go and relearn something completely different? And that's what I really did in my career. I started off as just a salesperson. And when I say just a salesperson, I say it as a singular role, and moved into more strategic business development, and then into more of a operations manager with still new business development skills, into a more of an executive role. So I think that I really do think that I wouldn't be where I am right now. I don't think I'd physically be where I am right now if I didn't have that ability to relearn.
So that 22-year-old is to ask questions, not to be afraid to ask questions.
Not be afraid to ask questions, not be afraid to be put into uncomfortable situations. There's so many times in my career where I can tell you, I sat around a business table and, felt like a fish out of water. But after you experience that a couple of times, you realize that that's the right place to be, is where when you're a fish out of water.
Can you share any of those? That does it come to recall quickly that you're able to share? That's not too.
Well, I would have to say, I think that when I moved from working in Toronto to working in New York, that's a really good example of, I had a different set of clients. They were US clients. Specifically, they had a different approach to doing business than the clients that I had been exposed to in Canada. And we were put into situations where, for example, we had to build content in very different ways. So an example of that would be we did a magazine for Acura. And for Acura, we would, for the northern states, we would, on pages 15 to 25, we would write stories that were, for example, where the cars would have snow tires and they would have to deal with these different types of elements, versus in the south where you would have the same car but with the different accessories that that would be relative to that particular marketplace. So there were a lot of changes in those ways that we had to change the way that we created content. We had to change the way that we extracted the data that would give us the insights and how to build the models for each one of those. And we were constantly learning and learning and learning each time through different markets throughout the U.S. So that's I'm probably being a little too detailed with it, but it's the one thing that came to mind, and it really is dealing with different people in different markets. Perfect examples of relearning and having to change your approach.
Yeah, it's funny. I was with a client of mine yesterday, and a very similar conversation came up between American and Irish, and really we're looking to hire somebody into this client. And one of the skill sets that the client needs is somebody who's able just to connect at a human level to their American brothers, per se, or fellow company members, because it's slightly different, and get them to understand a specific issue over here. So it was a regulatory issue that they need to be literate about. And it can't be washed away because it needs to happen. And sometimes, communication is a two-way process. Sometimes it's how you give the message and how someone receives the message. I think that's probably what you're saying there.
Yeah, I think so. I don't want to say that I believe that things have changed so much, that you would say something about how people interact with people. But I can tell you that I do believe that as much as we've become, disassociated with ourselves in a way that we've never been before because of COVID, because people are working so remote now, that when we all start to reintegrate and what that looks like, that future integration of people again, and how we communicate and how we manage those nuances, it's going to be, it will require a set of skills that, that are very unique. And, there's a lot of extroverts that are hiding right now that I think will be coming out in the next couple of years. And, it'll be interesting to see how they integrate back into, some of these sort of non-traditional business meetings that we've created.
And how is, just moving on to the Royal Gazette, which I know of, and it's for, ironically, on our podcast yesterday, Peter O'Reilly, who's a rugby journalist for the Sunday Times, was talking about print and talking about digital. How is it happening for you and the Royal Gazette, and obviously the affiliate digital and media sales?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. The first thing is that we're a company that has spent the last 3 or 4 years doing what a lot of media companies have been doing, which is fortifying and building very sophisticated technology platforms. And believe it or not, we've been doing the same thing. And the need for that is because if you're living in Bermuda and you want to read something, any kind of news, it's very easy just to click on the internet and get the New York Times or the Guardian or the Washington Post, and getting high quality journalism. And we've got a very sophisticated class of people here. So when they click, they have high expectations for the quality of the journalism and the content experience that they're going to have here. So we're working very hard on the technology side of it. We're one of those very few markets that still has a relatively robust print product that goes out into the marketplace. But what will happen that will be changing, the most profound change will be our move with the technology to a paywall, where people will soon start to come to the website. And after reading 5 or 6 stories, a message will come up and say, "Hey, can you please come and register with the Royal Gazette?" We may not make them pay right away, but we will start to engage them and collect their data by getting them to register. So these are some of the very specific things that are kind of happening from that perspective. I think for us, I think we see a future in the business content that we have from a digital perspective, because there is so much subject matter expertise on the business side on this island. We're very much pushing towards creating more business content and being a much more robust platform from that perspective. But so far things are, we're, you know, I would say that we're kind of hanging in there. I think the other perspective is that Bermuda also represents, as a very small island, a great place to do a lot of testing, a lot of data testing. So there's going to be a lot of that that we will do that we'll be able to share with other markets, you know, with our podcasts, with our the video that we do, the interactive content that we're creating. All of that is stuff that we'll be able to share with a lot of the businesses here on the island. And I think we're pretty excited about that.
That's good. I presume then that makes it sometimes easier to connect. And obviously, got the content right. And once you get that right, you can moderate it fairly quickly that you know what lands and doesn't land. You get immediate feedback, which probably helps.
It does. We don't have to, you know, it's not like you're trying to figure out data sets in New York or London or these huge markets. You know, we've got only 60,000 people on this island, and we're probably targeting about half of them, 25 or 30,000 of them, and maybe even less with the business community. So we'll be able to learn a lot. The data will help us learn a lot. Everything's becoming much more digitized in the sense that we're able to build a sophisticated archive of keywords and taxonomies that'll bring everything together that will be valuable to the entire island. This is not just about creating a product that you know, that we can monetize and have a fruitful business, but it's also an essential service to the community to be able to give them, you know, this archive and library of everything that's happened historically and continues to happen here on the island.
No, I think it sounds like another guest, Endo O'Quinine, owns the business Post in Ireland, and they are digital driven, really. And they took over a company called Red Sea, which was a research driven company because they saw an effect being able to provide research, or as you said, that digital data sets, digital breakdowns for their clients. So in effect, it's opening up with the existing clients, it's opening up those clients to something that's very, very important, because when you want to zero in on your content to get it to the right place, you need that digital footprint. You need to have read or someone who can translate that digital footprint, how it gets there.
Bermuda is such a unique environment. It's almost like, I feel like every couple of weeks, you know, I look at a story that we've posted, and I'm just amazed by the global quality of it. I just read a story just on Tuesday about a new company that's situated here called Realm, and they are going to be a reinsurance company for basically fintech and for digital assets. So I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, I'm reading about it, and I'm, you know, if somebody's got a, you know, is working in a very specific type of blockchain, and you know, I don't know, is it the executive loses the password and you're insured on that or something? I don't know. I just don't know how cybersecurity and this type of reinsurance is going to work. But this is a company. This is what they're doing. They're going to reinsure, you know, digital assets. And it's going to be just interesting to see that Bermuda could potentially be the center of this, because there's just not a lot of companies. I'm not even sure how many there are in the world that are currently insuring your digital assets.
Yeah, I know Mosaic on Island, they do a lot of cybersecurity, and other providers will do that. But digital assets is quite niche in a specific space. You know, I suppose with all this ransomware and hacking, like I know our health, what we call the HSE over here, our health services executive, the computers were hacked mid last year, and a check was written to the hackers. I know that because they needed the records back, or they needed access. Like it shut down a bit of the health system, which is awful and very serious. And so I would maybe understand where that reinsurance can come into play, because cost was hundreds of millions.
It's interesting. It's really interesting. And how do you, you know, how do you charge somebody for that insurance? Where's the historical data sets that you're using to say this is, you know, this is why your insurance premium is this?
Maybe you need a younger version of an Adam Smith to come, who'd be able to put a number on that. Such a brilliant man with the apple falling, he'd be well able to do that. Actually, now working while I have you, that 26, 27, I don't know, 28 year old professional coming to work in Bermuda. Why should they come to Bermuda? There's work obviously, but what else is there in Bermuda that they should think about?
Well, I think that, I think that especially with what's transpired in the last 3 or 4 years, there has been, you know, a real migration from urban markets for people to be able to work anywhere. So I think the first reason why people should come to Bermuda is because if they're looking at leaving, the urban environment and they want to work in a sort of a non-urban like environment, this is definitely the place for this. You're on an island. It's very much a small town feel, and it has an incredible work-life balance here. Whether you're 27 years old and you're not married, and you're not in a serious relationship, and you can be very mobile, this is a great place to come. It's vibrant in all of the right ways, but I think from a work perspective, the very simple thing that I would say about coming and working here when you're young is going to be your accessibility to people who are very well experienced in all facets of different businesses. So whether it's wealth management or reinsurance, or you're a CPA or a CFA, or those are the obvious markets or sectors, skill sets that flourish here. But I would have to say that the one single thing is your accessibility. I'm an avid golfer. When I moved to the island, I joined a golf club here, and I'm a marketing guy, so I'm not a numbers first guy. So I had to learn to lose money to actuaries while I was playing golf, even though I shot better scores than them. They found a way to still have me pay them money at the end of the round of golf. So your accessibility to really smart leaders, global leaders in certain sectors, it's right here. And I don't think that they have, maybe some of those hierarchical biases that tend to live in urban markets. You know, if you're a 20-something year old, you may have closed door protocols in your company to the CEO or the CFO or whoever it might be. That doesn't exist here. You're going to run into that person walking down the street. You're going to run into them probably at a restaurant one night. Maybe you play squash, you'll run into them there. It's a very small community. Everybody knows and sees everybody all the time. And so it's I would have to say that those are sort of the little things that are, would be a real benefit for someone who's really young coming here.
Gosh, I think you've articulated that very well, because it's opportunity with less competition. And if you've got the persona and personality, you can network very easily, as Bermuda is quite small, and people are very visible, and people may not realize that, because you're coming back to you're going from Canada to New York, London to Bermuda. There's just a different headset that goes on that. It just changes in that sense. So you have complete accessibility.
I think so. And I think I shouldn't dismiss the fact that your peers that are coming here, there's an expectation. It's not an easy island to get on. So when I say that, it's not an easy island to get a permit and land a job here. The competition is fierce in every area. So the other part of that too is that if you are 25 to 30 years of age and you do come to this island, you're also going to be in the trenches with very bright people that had to jump a lot of hurdles to get to where they are. And you know, it's a special experience to be with people that age, that are, you know, have just such an open concept to everything and the potentials that lie ahead for their lives, for their businesses, for everything. So I think it's a great opportunity to be with peers that that are the same age as you, but that are the best of the best.
That's very encouraging, because I think you've been very succinct about that and in presenting that to because some people don't maybe appreciate that if they're in the job. Like, you're looking in to from outside to in, you can see that happening, being on kind of not the sideline, but kind of observing in that sense. If you didn't do what you did or take the path, out of curiosity now, what would be the thing? God, I want to be a brain surgeon, or I want to be a ball player. Is there anything that you would have said, gosh, I'd love to have done that?
I'm not one of those persons that I think wanted to be a rock star. But if I had to pick something, I probably would have loved to have been a stand-up comedian. I look at the job that those guys have and making people laugh and being able to make observations in life, and you know, create interesting parodies around them. Yeah, that would have been something I would have loved to have done.
Wow, that's kind of a cool thing to do. That's a difficult thing to do, because it, you know, there's so many. I mean, because they get up there every night and they're one joke away from, you know, getting heckled or booed, and then there's so many people, and I think I have huge respect for any artist in that sense who exposes themselves. I think that's a real they're very special people as well.
Yeah, I did get a chance when I was in university. I did get a chance to do an open mic set once. It's the only time I ever did it, and I loved it and hated it at the same time. So.
Yeah. Well, I suppose being Irish, we have these Paddy the Irishman and Paddy the Englishman and Paddy the Scotsman. We have all these jokes. Some of them are not appropriate now, but they're actually quite, obviously they're against the, not against them or whatever, but they're making fun of us Irish, which we're very happy to do. But some of them can be quite funny, quite stupid, but quite funny in the sense of the obvious stuff. They're very cute, as we would say. Some of them can be very cute stories.
My favorite Irish comedian was Al Roach, and he used to have this great line that he would say. He'd say, "Oh, that was such a great joke. I wish I was out there listening to it. It was so good."
Yeah, he was very good, very quick, and and also they hold their voice well, because the voice is really the energy of the voice that's what people hear. And they hold it very well, even at the moment when it's a little bit, not sure. When you're not working, Michael, not playing golf, what do you do? What do you do to, I mean, stresses of the job? Do you have any, obviously, you read a lot of stuff, and you see a lot of stuff coming through all the various levels within the publications and online, obviously, on hard copy. Is there anything you do now that mindfulness or qigong, or you get a massage once a week, or go for a swim every day, or...
I'm pretty low key. I've been pretty low key since I've been in Bermuda, believe it or not. I've sort of been, you know, work really hard during the week, a little bit of golf and exploring the island with my wife. That's been kind of my weekly routine. I have two kids, one that's 25 and the other one that's 21. They take up still a lot of my time. So lots of, we're a very close knit family. So, you know, growing up, I was a hockey coach, for about 10 years for my son. So spent a lot of time in hockey rinks. But I have to say that the one, you know, one thing that I have added daily to my life, about 5 or 6 years ago, is I started, a morning yoga, and you know, I think it's a bit of a meditation, but really just this morning yoga and core session that I do. It only takes me about 20 minutes every day, but it's it rivals my one drug, which is caffeine, and I don't drink as much coffee now because of that. So it's the one thing that I do. I started it when I got to Bermuda, because the vistas are just gorgeous out my window. And I thought, okay, you know, when I was in Canada, I was thought about doing something like this, so I'm going to try it. But I fell in love with that. And, you know, certainly the more walking than I've ever done in my life now that I'm in Bermuda. Although in New York, I used to think that you couldn't walk more than, you know, you go to New York, all you do is walk. But, you know, that's the pavement. And it's a little bit different when you're walking a beautiful shoreline on the railway trail here.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. And three words to describe your career so far.
I feel like I've inspired myself every day. I'm my own inspiration to want to do better and to do more. So I would say my career has been full of inspiration. I would say the second thing for sure that describes my career are those people that I've met along the way. Just people like you. you're a perfect example of one of those persons that I've met along the way. So I would have to say inspiration, people, and you know, this is a real corny one, but I'm going to have to say the word trust. It's been a really, it's, you know, I've trusted a lot of things, a lot of people, a lot of businesses, a lot of ideas. You really have to trust things. You have to let go and trust things, because I think that's where the luck is. You know, we always talk about that person's lucky. And I think you have to put yourself out there and trust a situation, trust your intuition. These aspects of trust are critical. You can't, you know, tie yourself up into a ball and say, you know, I control this. I understand this. This is the way that I'm going to succeed because, you know, I'm wrapping my hands around this. I'm not sure that's the right approach. At least it wasn't for me.
Okay. And I think that's a lovely way to finish, because that last bit of trusting your intuition, your experience, and it's kind of the glass is kind of half full, even if it doesn't look half full.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you know. Michael Islam, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the Career Scoop. It's been a great pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you very much. Anytime, James.
Thank you for listening to The Career Scoop, brought to you by Elevate Career Advice and Elevate Executive Selection, Dublin and Bermuda. I'm James Fitzsimons, and I hope you've enjoyed listening.